Next case. United States versus Ross.
Thank you, and good morning, Your Honors. Mr. Ross is appealing from the district court's judgment imposing as a special condition of supervised release that he participate in sex offender treatment and also that he submit to a polygraph if asked to do so. We believe that the court not only abused its discretion when imposing this condition, but also committed plain error because there is no evidence in the record that Mr. Ross is a sex offender. First of all, this offense was not a sex offense. It was a violation of 18 United States Code, Section 1001, lying to a federal official. In this case,
but he was lying about a child, wasn't he?
He was lying about, yes, the whereabouts of a child who had been killed, it is believed. I don't think the fact that he was lying about an incident necessarily makes him a sex offender.
He had sex violations in prison, right?
He had sexual misconduct violations. They were not, though, of a non-consensual nature, and they were not with a minor. Any sex in prison is a violation, and I think anybody who commits a sexual act in prison is not necessarily a sex offender as we define it. I think a sex offender is generally defined as someone who either has sex with somebody non-consensual.
Well, maybe there's a potential there, and isn't that part of what the judge ordered, that he be evaluated?
Well, I think that has been evaluated by psychiatrists. He was evaluated once he left prison in 2003, and it was specifically excluded that he was a sex offender. He was considered narcissistic with antisocial behavior, but not a sex offender.
It doesn't hurt to have another opinion, does it?
Well, I think the opinion has been exhausted. We had a psychologist examine him. Our psychologist did not consider him a sex offender. The Bureau of Prisons presumably does some kind of examination. They have not considered him a sex offender. There is a special prison for sex offenders at Butner, North Carolina. He has not been placed there. He's at Still, South Carolina. He has not been segregated from the prison community. I think if the Bureau of Prisons thought that he was a danger, they would have segregated him from the prison community. So we just don't think there is any evidence. I think it's more of a fact of guilt by association. Yes, he associated with people who have been charged with sex offenses, but that fact alone should not make him subject to the sex offender provisions. And I think the government classifies the condition as a minor deprivation of liberty, but I really don't think it is minor. First of all, there's a stigma attached to being a sex offender, I think a great stigma, perhaps one of the largest stigmas that this society bestows on a person. And this is a public document. It's in the judgment. Anybody can see it. He must undergo a polygraph if required, and I think that's a major deprivation of his privacy interests. And he would be subject to imprisonment if he does not follow through with these things. Not to mention the fact that some process could be started, I think, in the state courts where he could be classified as a sex offender through state law, and then all of the requirements that go along with that, and including even possibly some type of confinement. So we don't believe that it's a minor deprivation of his liberty interests, and for that reason, it was a plain error, and it is a miscarriage of justice. And if there aren't any other questions, I will reserve my time.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Mullins. Mr. Hanstead?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Gregory Hanstead for the United States. The sole issue presented by this appeal is whether the district court erred in imposing as a condition of supervised release a requirement that Mr. Ross participate in a program of sex offender assessment and treatment. Because he did not object at the time of sentencing, this court's review is for plain error. That is, the error has to be one that not only is clear and obvious, but also one that is of such significance that a failure to correct it would result in a miscarriage of justice.
Well, you don't question Mr. Mullins' assertion that this has some attendant consequences.
I do not, Your Honor. Our position is simply that the error that's asserted by Mr. Ross satisfies neither of the requirements to establish plain error. First of all, with respect to whether it's error at all, a sentencing court has wide discretion to impose terms of supervised release. There are, of course, some limits to what the court can do in terms of imposing conditions of supervised release. First of all, the conditions must be reasonably related to a legitimate sentencing purpose. In this case, the condition that Mr. Ross participate in a program of assessment and treatment is reasonably related to the goals of deterrence, protection of the public, and rehabilitation or correctional treatment for the offender. The sentencing
let me ask you this, Mr. Hanson. Suppose we just had the prison conduct. Do you think that would justify the decision of the district court?
Based just on the violation report?
Right. Which I suspect is all too common in prison. But.
I think that it would, Your Honor. Here, what's being imposed by the district court is assessment followed by treatment. It's a little bit difficult at this point to know exactly what all that's going to entail because the district court has essentially delegated to the probation office the terms of the assessment and any resultant treatment. But, of course, we don't have only that prison violation here.
No, I appreciate that. I'm just trying to make sure what one could extrapolate from this case should the government succeed in its position.
I'll get to this in a minute, but there's also there are mechanisms by which a defendant can seek to have his conditions modified. And partly for that reason, again, this is not a miscarriage of justice. That is under Section 3583E2 of Title 18, as well as under Federal Rule of Criminal Procedure 32.1C. A defendant can at any time ask that certain conditions be modified or eliminated. So here, if in this case or in any other, if it turns out that the conditions are unwarranted or unreasonable, or they prove not to be reasonably related to a legitimate sentencing goal, the defendant can come before the district court, ask that the condition be removed or modified.
What are the circumstances of the special agent interviewing Mr. Ross? What caused the contact initially, which produced the story that he related?
Mr. Ross indicated that he had knowledge of this.
Oh, he contacted the authorities?
That's right, Your Honor. It was an investigation that had been ongoing for some time into the disappearance of this young girl. Now, again, we were talking about the prison misconduct, and Mr. Mullins indicated correctly that after Ross was in prison between 1998 and 2002, he underwent psychological evaluation in 2003. And that particular evaluator concluded that Ross was, not that he wasn't likely to commit a sexual offense, what he concluded specifically, according to the PSR that was in front of the district court judge, was that Ross was unlikely to act out in a sexually violent manner. Now, it's not clear from the record what the evaluator meant by acting out in a sexually violent manner. It's not clear at all that particular phrase encompasses all sexual offenses. It's also worth noting, I think, that the same evaluator concluded that the defendant was highly manipulative and predatory and was particularly likely to prey upon vulnerable individuals. And that manipulative and predatory nature is precisely what underlaid the sexual misconduct that resulted in
What was the assertion of the child sex ring?
The child sex ring?
Yeah.
During the course of interviewing with FBI agents, Mr. Ross indicated that he was a member of a child sex ring and that he was involved in transporting minors. He and other members of this sex ring would drug minors and take them across state lines for basically trade them for drugs and for money with other individuals.
Was he charged with something while he was making these assertions? Was he trying to trade off information for something else, what I'm asking?
Your Honor, I'm not sure whether he was or not.
Sounds a little strange to go in and admit to something like that. But it turns out it was not true, though.
The FBI's assessment was, with respect to the location of the missing girl, his information
right.
wasn't true. I don't know if they really came to that conclusion with respect to the child sex ring. The assessment was that Mr. Ross was giving a story that had some parts of truth to it, some parts of fiction, and it was difficult to separate the two. But even if the statement by Mr. Ross, if the statement by Mr. Ross that he was involved in a child sex ring were true, then I think the case for sex offender assessment and treatment would be clear. But even if it isn't true, those statements suggest a type of fixation on aberrant and illegal sexual behavior. And in either event, assessment and possible subsequent treatment are reasonably related to addressing any propensity that Mr. Ross has for sexual misconduct, and thereby providing not only rehabilitation for him, but also protection for the public. Now, the condition of release, a condition of release imposed by district court also has to involve no greater deprivation of liberty than is reasonably necessary to advance the legitimate sentencing goals that it's seeking to advance. And again, I touched on this earlier. At this point, at least, the condition imposed by the district court was simply assessment followed by treatment as deemed appropriate. It doesn't appear from the face of that condition that is overly restrictive of Mr. Ross's liberty, but again, there is this mechanism, or these two mechanisms actually that exist, one under Title 18 and one under the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure, where he can go in and seek to have these modified. A condition of release also has to be consistent with policy statements issued by the Sentencing Commission, and there are a number of places in which the Sentencing Commission has policy statements that indicate their view that this type of condition of release is appropriate, but most specifically in Section 5D1.3 sub D of the Sentencing Guidelines, the Sentencing Commission has issued a policy statement where it describes exactly the type of assessment followed by treatment that was imposed as a condition of release here.
Is it based on a sexual crime, conviction for a sexual crime?
That particular section of the Sentencing Guidelines?
Or do they just put it in the abstract?
That particular guideline provision provides that the Sentencing Commission recommends that condition be imposed in the cases of convictions for sexual offenses.
That's what my question was.
But
say anything about imposing it at some time when there was no sexual conviction, although you had a pre-suspicion that the guy was a little wacky?
It does, Your Honor, not quite in those terms, but
sexual average.
Well, what it provides is that, again, in the case of any sex offense, the commission recommends that this be imposed, but 5D1.3 sub D also provides that, in addition, the court may impose it where it otherwise deems it appropriate in particular cases. Again, the government's position is that there was no error here by Judge Clavert in imposing this special condition of supervised release, and that particularly given the modification procedures available to the defendant, even if there was an error, it did not result in the miscarriage of justice, and therefore it was not plain error. And unless the court has any further questions, I'd ask that the sentence imposed by the district court be affirmed.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Hanstead.
Thank you.
Mr. Mullins?
A couple of items. I guess I think there's a certain amount of irony in the fact that the government is trying to use the statements made by Mr. Ross to impose a condition of his release, and those same statements were the statements that were the subject of his conviction for lying to the FBI. So I think the court should really not give those statements a whole lot of credibility, and if the court is going to find that the condition is proper, it must look outside of those statements, and we don't believe that there is sufficient evidence there. With the statements.
Now, let me just track that a second, Mr. Mullins. Why couldn't the court look to the nature of the statements that he made?
Well, I think you can look to it, but I think it shouldn't give the statements a lot of credibility, given that the FBI does not believe them.
Well, that happens with the sex ring aspect, and I think counsel explained it. They didn't believe that they knew where a body was buried, but they didn't say we don't believe he was part of a sex ring. Right?
No, but I think any part of his statement has to be taken with a grain of salt. Certainly the court can consider it, but I just don't think it should be given a lot of weight. And I don't think these dubious statements rise to the level of classifying him as a sex offender.
Of course, you could tell your client he talked himself into it, so,
He talked himself into a number of things. So
he sure did.
I think I could certainly say that.
Was he charged? Was he charged with other offenses other than lying? I mean, was he charged with other offenses while he was talking to the FBI?
No, he was not. And you know, I think the fact that he was never charged in state court with any of these other offenses is also indicative that the statements have some dubious merit to him.
Mr. Mullins, is it the backdrop of this that he placed this call to, what, the Bureau? And
the backdrop, I believe, is that at least what he said, which, again, we really can't necessarily take a great deal of, it probably isn't worth a lot of veracity, but what he said was that this ring of people had threatened to get his child into some kind of abuse situation, that they were going to abuse his child. And as a result of that, he went to the FBI and told them what was going on.
His motivation was to protect his child.
That's my understanding.
From himself and others like him.
Well, at least these people that he was associating with. I mean, he definitely was associating with a sordid group of characters, but I think we need more than that to classify somebody as a sex offender.
There's no evidence he had a child, right?
He did not have the child that he provided the picture of. That was not his child. But my understanding is that he does have a child, but it was not the child that was pictured. And I do think the program is a little more onerous than the government indicates. He shall participate in a program of sex offender mental health assessment as approved by the supervising probation officer until such time as he is released from the program. So really, he could be on this indefinitely. He's pretty much at the whim of the probation officer.
Thank you, Mr. Mullins. Thank you, Mr. Hansed. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will stand in recess.